Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Trust excellence built on 40 years of experience. Visit zurichcorporate.ie to learn more about the Zurich Master Trust.
Thank you very much indeed for that. Now, judges at the International Court of Justice, as you've been hearing in the headlines, have ordered Israel to immediately halt its military assault on Rafah in a landmark emergency ruling in South Africa's case against Israel, which has accused Israel of genocide. The International Court of Justice also ordered Israel to open the Rafah crossing between Egypt and Gaza to allow humanitarian aid in and report back on its progress within 1 month. The decision came just days after the chief prosecutor of the International Criminal Court, a separate court also based in The Hague, announced he had filed an application for arrest warrants against Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Defence Minister Yoav Gallant, as well as leaders of Hamas. In a few minutes, I'll speak with Jonathan Turner, who's chief executive of UK Lawyers for Israel. But first, I'm joined by Fionnuala Nyalon, who's professor of law and former UN Special Rapporteur on the Protection of Human Rights. Professor Nyalon, you're very welcome to the programme. Can I get your reaction, first of all, initially, to this ruling from the International Court of Justice?
Well, I think it's a very significant ruling. We've seen South Africa go back on several occasions now since the first call for provisional measures in January was issued. And each time they've made the case to the court that conditions are worsening and the court has to actually take new provisional measures. But this is really the most pointed and, I would say, focused set of provisional measures that the court has issued. 13-2, they've said that Israel must cease its military operations in Gaza. And it's reminiscent, of course, of the decision they issued in relation to Russia and Ukraine, where there's not much wriggle room for the state here. There's no ambiguity about that. And they've also been really clear that they remain deeply concerned about the humanitarian situation, and they confirm that it's worsening. So none of that is good news for Israel, but to be clear, provisional orders doesn't stop the violence. And now what we need is state enforcement of the court's provisional orders. And I think that's really the challenge now, is to ensure compliance.
How much work goes into delivering a ruling like this? And what I mean by that is, how much evidence is presented to the court? How much time do the judges pour over the evidence before making that ruling?
Well, we don't have a clock in and clock out for the judges, but what we do know is that they've had at this point already both the evidence, the preliminary evidence presented by South Africa and Israel. They've had several reports from Israel plus responses to that. And of course, it's really obvious from these preliminary measures that they've poured over, in particular, the evidence that's been put forward by the United Nations, by UNRWA, by the Secretary General, by UNICEF. All of these are mentioned in the court's deliberation. So it's very clear they're looking at the facts on the ground. They're very specific in what they're saying about hospitals, about access to water, about the safety of moving people. So they're paying attention to the detail. Now, to be clear, and lots of people make this mistake, they say, well, this is a finding of genocide by the court. It is not a finding of genocide by the court. What the court is clearly saying is that the right to be free from genocide, to ensure that genocide is prevented, is implicated by Israel's actions. And so to kind of keep hold of that question, to make sure that they can answer the question of whether there is or there is not genocide in the affirmative or the negative, they're telling Israel to halt its actions to ensure that that is not implicated. Mm-hmm. So I think we also have to be clear that South Africa didn't get everything it wanted. It wanted a full ceasefire. That is not what the court has said. It has very narrowly said they have to stop what they're doing in Rafah. But it should also not be read as saying that there is a complete end to hostilities at this point. So the court didn't go as far as it could have gone, and certainly it didn't go as far as South Africa asked it to go.
The court's ruling is legally binding, but it can't enforce the ruling. Now, can you explain that to us a little bit?
Well, I suppose international courts, which are different from domestic courts, don't have armies or policemen to summon when they issue rulings. And the International Court of Justice is no different. And in fact, one of the judges precisely said that. He said, the court is just a court. And so what it requires, though, is states to comply. And of course, Israel, for its own sake, and I think this is really important, rule of law abiding states comport with the ICJ's judgments because it's in their interest to do so, not just because they have a full hearing ahead on the merits of the case, but also to actually uphold the rules-based order in international law. The second thing that follows from this is for Israel's allies, which is there are many, many countries, and I would put Ireland, the European Union and others in the bucket of states who say we solidly support the enforcement of this court's findings and its provisional measures. So these countries are also going to say to Israel, it's not just in your interest to do so, but actually we, these countries, may be faced with other not good possibilities, namely to put sanctions in place against you if you don't comport with these with this preliminary finding by the court.
What kind of sanctions?
Well, we've seen them before. Obviously, we've seen them in the context of the Ukraine and Russia conflict. We've seen the issuance of provisional measures by the International Court of Justice. We've seen Russia's non-compliance with those provisional measures. And we've seen other states use economic sanctions deliberately and specifically saying that part of the calculation of the decision to use those sanctions was their non-compliance with the ICJ. Mm-hmm. So the most obvious one, of course, would be economic sanctions, but also further isolation. And that's not in anyone's interest. We continue to recognize that we have hostages held in Gaza. We continue to recognize that you have a non-state designated terrorist group continuing to act in Gaza. And it is in no one's interest, particularly the Palestinian people's interest, that those challenges are not met with the support of the world. But to do that, you have to abide by the rule of law. You have to not engage in genocide, and you have to ensure that you don't commit war crimes. And so a state that wants to have the moral high ground here is obliged to enforce international law. And it's not an a la carte menu. You don't get to decide when you want it and when you don't. The point is that you, as a democratic state, if you say you're a democratic state, are bound by these rules.
Okay. Professor of Law and former UN Special Rapporteur on the Protection of Human Rights, Fionnuala Ní Éalan, thank you very much indeed for joining us. I'm also joined by Chief Executive of UK Lawyers for Israel, Jonathan Turner. Jonathan, you're very welcome back to the programme. I'm glad to have you with us again this evening. Can I get your reaction to the International Court of Justice's ruling?
Well, thank you for having me on again. So, first of all, I think the way you described the ruling earlier, and to some extent the way the previous speaker described it, is not actually a correct interpretation of the order. When you read it carefully, and you do have to read it carefully, look at what the words say, including the punctuation, it is, I think, quite clear that it only prevents Israel from carrying out military or other operations in Rafah if and to the extent that they could bring about the physical destruction of Palestinians as a group in Gaza, mm-hmm. in whole or in part, let's say as a national or ethnic or racial group in Gaza.
Yeah, and that's quite clear. And the interpretation, which is being widely it's being widely interpreted in various international news organizations and from experts that have been on, is that that's the court, the ICJ, ordering Israel to stop its operation in Rafah. Are you saying that Israel won't comply or is unlikely to comply with that order?
I am saying that that is not a correct interpretation of the court's order. And it is notable that media organisations previously interpreted the order of the court back in January wrongly. And President Donoghue, the judge presiding over the court in January, who's now retired, has said in an interview on the BBC, in the Hard Talk programme by Stephen Sacker, She said that the media organisations have been and others have been reporting this wrongly. We did not decide that there was a plausible case of genocide. We decided that there was Palestinians and South Africa have plausible rights. And then went on to talk about the risk of irreparable damage to the plausible rights, but did not decide there was a plausible case of genocide. And your previous speaker correctly acknowledged that. Mm. But I mentioned that what the court said is not necessarily correct.
So you disagree with that interpretation? Jonathan, can I ask a question? Can I ask a question? So you disagree with that interpretation. But the wider interpretation I would put to you is that the ICJ is asking for a cessation of its operation, Israel's operation in Rafah. If
no, I don't think so.
Let me ask. I'm saying that that seems to be the wider interpretation. So can I ask you, if they don't comply with that order, are they likely to be viewed as a rogue state?
Well, I think they are going to comply with the order and carry on their operation. So I don't think your suggestion applies.
They've also ordered that the Rafah border crossing with Egypt be opened for the entry of humanitarian aid. Do you think that should happen, or do you think Israel will comply?
Well, Israel wants to open the Rafah crossing, and it's open on the Gaza side where the Israeli forces are in control of the area of the crossing on the Gaza side. But Egypt refuses to open it. The crossing is between the Gaza Strip and Egypt, not between the Gaza Strip and Israel. So it will only be opened if Egypt is willing to open it, or if Israel invades Egypt, kills or gets the Egyptian troops to surrender starts a war against Egypt. Now, I don't believe that the International Court could have possibly intended that to be
I don't think that's their interpretation, because they didn't order Egypt to order the crossing. They ordered Israel to open the crossing. They also want Israel to come back within a month to make sure this complying with these orders. And if they don't, there is a situation where it could reflect badly, as Professor Nielon said, in the wider case of genocide against Israel, and it could further isolate Israel on the world stage. Is that a fear, I wonder?
Yeah. Can I just say also, in relation to the Rafah crossing, there are numerous other crossings that are now open. So the Rafah crossing is not actually necessary to enable the humanitarian aid to go into the Gaza Strip and into a Rafah area
itself.
The ICJ
obviously believes it is.
Well, I think that is shows a lack of care and attention to detail by the International Court. I think the previous speaker was wrong to suggest that they had looked at every matter in this case carefully. I think what they said about Rafah shows a distinct lack of care and attention to detail, which I think is deeply unsatisfactory.
Well, we need to be careful about detail, don't we? And can I go back to your claim that the interpretation of the order to stop its military operation in Rafah is incorrect? Let me quote to you Judge Salam. He's the president of the International Court of Justice. In ordering Israel to halt its offensive in Rafah, he said the current situation there entailed further risks of irreparable harm to the rights of people in Gaza. He said the situation had changed since the ICJ made its previous orders and conditions had been met for new emergency measures in the case. And the court notes, he said, that the catastrophic humanitarian situation in the Gaza Strip, which, as stated in its order of the 26th of January 2024, was at serious risk of deteriorating, has deteriorated, and has done so even further since the court adopted its order of the 28th of March. So there you have it. He's saying that the conditions have been fulfilled to order a cessation of the operation in Rafah.
Well, the last bit wasn't there in what you just quoted. The court did make an additional order, but it didn't say that operation must cease unconditionally.
It wasn't there. I have it open in front of me, Jonathan.
Which paragraph are you looking at?
I have the... It's in the conclusion and measures to be adopted.
No, he said, immediately halt its military offensive...
Paragraph 28.
And any
can you go to paragraph... No, let's work this out together. Do you have it open before you?
Yeah, I've got it here.
Okay, can you go to paragraph 28?
Yes, okay.
Can you read it out for me?
That's not the end of the order.
Yeah, no, I know it's not. Can you read that out for me?
But 28. The court notes that the catastrophic humanitarian situation in the Gaza Strip, which, as stated in its order of 26 January 2024, was at serious risk of deteriorating, has deteriorated and has done so even further since the court adopted its order of 28 March 2024. That's what you say. And I should say that the evidence shows...
That's exactly
contrary,
what you said wasn't there.
No.
Paragraph 29 says the court considers...
What I said wasn't there was the court ordering that the operation in Rafah must cease immediately, full stop. He didn't actually say, he added always the qualification.
Let's read paragraph 29 together. The court considers that the above-mentioned developments, which are exceptionally grave, in particular the military offensive in Rafah, and the resulting repeated large-scale displacement of the already extremely vulnerable Palestinian population in the Gaza Strip, constitute a change in the situation within the meaning of Article 76 of the Rules of the Court. And he goes...
Yes, and that still doesn't say that the operation must cease.
Okay.
So you go to where he puts the conclusion in his reasoning, if you like, which is that... sorry, I'm just... the actual order is on page 15, and that says, immediately halt its military offensive and any other action in the Rafah governorate, comma, which may inflict on the Palestinian group in Gaza conditions of life that could bring about its physical destruction in whole or in part. Mm. And certainly my interpretation of the order... very clearly affirmed in the concurring judgments of Judge Nolte and Judge Arescu, and also in the dissenting judgment of Judge Barak.
Okay. Which you
know
we'll do.
There's no suggestion that those judges, Judge Salam, didn't come back and say, no, you've misinterpreted my order.
Do you know what we'll do?
Okay. So I think it's actually very clear at this point.
Okay, maybe it is. Maybe it is from your point of view. Do you know what we will do? Because we can pore over every single word of the court's order today. Let's have a quick glance of the international news agencies and their headlines. Let me go first to The Guardian. UN's top court orders Israel to immediately halt Rafah offensive. Let me go to the BBC.
Yes, this won't be the first time that the Guardian's
Let me do it. Okay, well, maybe the BBC then, you prefer. UN's top court orders Israel to halt military operations in Rafah. Are they also incorrect?
Yeah, and again, I mean, the BBC got it wrong previously.
Okay, so let me give you the New York Times then. Maybe the New York Times will get it right. Top UN court orders Israel to halt its offensive in Rafah.
Are you taking us for fools,
Jonathan?
Yes, well, I'm afraid you've all got it wrong.
Everyone is wrong, bar Israel.
No, not bar Israel. As I said, these media organisations, I think all of them, got it wrong previously in relation to the January order, and it took Judge Donoghue, the president of the court, to say she welcomed the opportunity to correct it on Stephen Sacker's interview on the BBC.
Okay.
And the BBC have since published an article on their website, which effectively acknowledges they got it wrong. And my colleague, Natasha Hausdorff, who's very incisive and very able, have pointed this out.
It is incredible that everybody has got it wrong, bar the UK lawyers for Israel. Let me quote you one other headline
We are a very careful and accurate organisation.
Fair enough. Let me quote you, and I accept that you think that as well. The Haaretz newspaper, an Israeli newspaper, ICJ orders Israel to halt any Rafah offensive that harms civilians. Can I ask you then? Let's imagine.
That's closer to the truth, not quite correct.
That's
more close.
Can I ask you then? Do you think Israel should allow investigators into Gaza? Because that's another order that the ICJ has made.
Well, I think that's a difficult decision for Israel to make. I agree that the court did order that. Israel has very genuine and legitimate concerns regarding the lack of impartiality and, frankly, lack of integrity of some of the UN staff and rapporteurs, etc. So I don't know what Israel will do in this regard.
Okay.
But certainly that is something that the court has ordered.
Jonathan Turner, Chief Executive of UK Lawyers for Israel. Thank you for joining us.